podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Well, do you know what? I think we're recording this podcast at a very weird time as well. Because right now, as we're recording this, we don't really know what Rotherham's fate is.
I think we do.
At the end of the day, football, it's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Welcome to episode 17 of Comedians Talking About Football. I'm Sam Michael. Don't forget, we're coming near to the end of the series now. So if you have any questions for us, we're going to do a special right at the very, very end, maybe a couple of weeks after the last episode of Series 2, but we answer your questions. So if you have any, you can always email them to us at comedianstalkingaboutfootball@gmail.com, or you can send us a message on Twitter or Instagram, where you should be following us anyway. Same handle for both of them as always, at @comtalkfootypod. So give us a follow on there if you haven't already. I hope you've enjoyed the series so far as well. We've had some great guests on. I've really, really enjoyed it. We've had some really good episodes, I think. If you have enjoyed it, I would really, really appreciate a review, whether it be on Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Podchaser, wherever, really. It'd be hugely appreciated. If not, no worries. You can always tell your friends about the podcast if you think it's something they'd enjoy. But failing that, no worries. I'm just grateful you've listened to one episode. Anyway, my guest today is Jonathan Elston, and he is a comedian, and he's lived in Berkshire, like me. And you know what that means? Yeah, we finally got an episode about Rotherham. Yeah. Now, growing up in Reading, I knew a lot of football fans who lived in the area who were supporters of Manchester United, Arsenal, Chelsea, you know, the usuals. But I've got to say, someone from Reading who supports Rotherham, that's a new one for me. We certainly can't accuse him of glory supporting. Anyway, let's get straight into it. This is Jonathan Elston talking all things Rotherham. And I want to say as a disclaimer now, we did record this a matter of, I think, hours before Rotherham were confirmed to be relegated from the Championship. So, anyway, Jonathan Elston, Rotherham United.
Comedians talking about football.
I'm sure you've come across many a glory supporters in our little town of Berkshire. You've got your Man United fans, your Arsenal fans, your Chelsea fans, even more embarrassingly in the last 10 years, your Man City fans. And I was very surprised, you know, obviously I sat down with you one evening when we were doing a comedy together. And I was like, so do you like football? You're like, yeah, you know, I support a team up north. I thought, oh, here we go, another United fan. And you were a United fan, but you're a Rotherham United fan. Explain yourself, sir.
Okay. So I grew up in Croydon. From my childhood house, I could see Selhurst Park. And so obviously the natural conclusion was to be a Rotherham fan. My dad. It's a classic, isn't it? My dad's grew up and born in Rotherham, big Rotherham fan. And he basically undertook what can only be described as a horrific Hearts and Minds campaign from the age of 2 years on. At four, either support Rotherham or maybe start paying your own rent somewhere.
Fair enough. I mean, that's kind of the only way you could surely force someone into supporting Rotherham, but yeah, absolutely.
I just want to start this off, right? I feel like Rotherham get a lot of, we seem to get a lot more negativity than I feel like people have a much more negative opinion. But they needed to. I listened to the Nathan Caton one the other day of this podcast.
Yeah. Right?
And he said, oh, it was probably long ball because it was Rotherham. I'm going to throw that out there. Just want to start this off. Right. I don't know about you, but I would like to say I feel like Brentford fans are like Man City fans, where they seem to have forgotten where they were 10 years ago.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
We play lovely football. Oh, it's so amazing. Oh, all this sort of stuff. And you go, you used to have Leo Fortune-Mest up front. We remember.
Oh, I don't know if we've started our first beef ever in Comedians Talking About Football. Nathan Cate and Jonathan Elston.
I'm just saying. I think Brentford are a wonderful club. I think they're the model that most football league clubs would love to follow.
Hmm.
And I'm very jealous of them. But let's not pretend they've always been this amazing, free-flowing, attacking football team that we now see. Let's not pretend, because they didn't.
No, they used to be, to be honest, I remember them a lot as a... especially, like you were saying, 10 years ago, they were like a League One team. And when they came into the Championship, they were an easy kind of 3 points for a lot of the time. I said, that's probably quite harsh. I think, you know, that's coming from a team who I support who are very much an easy 3 points. So I probably shouldn't say that. But yeah, I do know what you mean. Rotherham are a funny one because is it safe to say that they have kind of spent most of their time kind of in... the sort of, I'd say, top end of League One and the bottom end of the Championship. They're almost like a yo-yo club, but for League One and Championship.
Our natural habitat is probably about 8th in League One.
Right.
if Attenborough was to look through it. Do you know what I mean? You know, if you were looking, he would say, that's where we naturally are. Because we don't have the fan base anymore to support the costs of Championship, not consistently. But equally, we are big enough that we'd normally do well or reasonably well in League One. Of course, over many years, as a Rotherham fan, I've seen us be rubbish in League Two. But generally speaking, top end of League One.
Well, do you know what? I think we're recording this podcast at a very weird time as well. Because right now, as we're recording this, we don't really know what Rotherham's fate is.
I think we do.
I was trying to be nice there. I felt bad about Nathan Caton coming on the show and having a go. And I always thought, no, I'll give him some hope.
I'm not delusional. I just feel sometimes rather than one of those clubs that, oh, must be long ball up. Not, you know, I mean, come on, guys. Let's just, you know, let's not be hack about it, you know? Let's look at the nuance.
So, because I did think that we could do, I'll tell you what we'll do now. And I'm going to ask you 2 questions. Because by the time this podcast comes out, there'll be an answer, basically. We'll know if Rotherham survived or if they went down. So I just thought the best thing to do, Jonathan, is to just ask you both. So first of all, Jonathan, I'm really sorry to see Rotherham have gone back down to League One. It's a shame, really. You know, you came up in a really positive fashion last season and a difficult season as well, the pandemic season. And it's been a shame that, you know, in your season in the Championship, you've not been able to get and see a game. The fans haven't been able to get behind the closed doors. So, just how are you feeling now that it's all done and dusted and you've been relegated?
Relieved. I think if as we've gone down, obviously, I think for a lot of Rotherham fans, I think it's a hard watch in the Championship when you're watching us play against teams that we are financially mismatched against at almost incredible level. So it's hard to watch a season where you're hoping for 10 wins. And it's definitely much more enjoyable to watch it in a division, Rotherham in division, where they're more competitive. So obviously no one likes relegation, but I think everyone's used to us leaving the Championship now. It's not a new feeling.
And on the flip side to that, because again, as we record this, we don't know what's going to happen. Jonathan, fantastic. What a season for Rotherham. The great escape. They've done it. Wayne Rooney's breakdown resulted in Derby getting relegated and Rotherham have survived. You've got Championship football next season. It looks like the fans are getting back in there. You might be able to get a game in the Championship. You can see them face the likes of, who knows what, your Sheffield United, Swansea, if they don't go up, all these big teams. How are you feeling now that Rotherham have pulled off the unthinkable?
I think I was one of the only fans that said I was sure we were going to stay up. I had no doubt about it. I always felt we had it. I knew Warnie had the boys believing. I believed New York next year is going to be a fortress. Look at Barnsley. All I'm saying is, super sick, you know, big leagues, we're going.
Well, excellent. Many, many congratulations on that. What a final day. Oh, amazing. And now, obviously, a third option. So, the pandemic took a turn for the absolute worse, and football as we know it has been null and void, with no football existing from now on, and the European Super League now making a big comeback and returning, leaving Rotherham redundant. Jonathan, how must you feel?
I would genuinely feel awful. But I do also really like cricket, so I'd probably get by.
There could be a Super League cricket.
There is. It's called the IPL. It exists.
There we go. Shows what I know about cricket.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
So, from European Super League to to Rotherham United. So, what were your kind of early? As you said, you know, it was with your dad and everything that you got into Rotherham. What were your kind of earlier memories of Rotherham? Who were the players when you started watching them?
So, obviously, I'm terrible. You know, as a kid, you always mix up what age you think you were when you saw football for the first time. I think the first player that I remember really falling in love with was, when you watch a player and go, oh, he's amazing. He's the best player that we're going to play, was Sean Gota.
Yes.
Who a lot of Man City fans, I think Bristol City fans will know. I went on to have a great career.
At Reading as well. He popped in.
Yeah, did he? but he was, I remember him scoring a couple of goals on one of the first games I went to. I think we were probably playing Bournemouth way before Bournemouth were the Bournemouth they are now.
Mm.
And I just remember thinking, this is brilliant. This is great. He's an aggressive centre forward, knocking in the goals. We're winning. Football's the best thing. And Rotherham are obviously going to be like this forever.
Yeah.
Every game's going to be this good. Maybe not so much.
And so what sort of year do you remember the sort of seasons that you got into it? Was it during the times of the EFL, was it more nationwide divisions back then?
Oh yeah, it probably would have been nationwide, because I always remember do you remember how hard it was to find Football League highlights growing up? It was always like 1 a.m. or something on BBC2. And was it like the Ensley? Was that a sponsorship back then?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, that was ITV, I think. Yeah. I remember it because I remember obviously we had the Football League show that was on the BBC where you'd stay up till 3 a.m. to watch Manish kind of dissect 6 seconds highlights of your 5-3 thrashing, and then they'd quickly go to Steve Claridge and he'd go, what do you think about that? And he'd go, well, at the end of the day, it's football. And that would be it for like 80 games. And then it would finish about 6 o'clock the next morning. Then before that, you had the Championship, which was, do you remember the ITV short-lived the Premiership? They basically took all the branding and like sparkle from that and put it on the Championship. I think that was on at about 7 in the morning on a Sunday or something like that. But yeah, the other one was, I think it would have been ITV, because wasn't that around the time, I think, ITV Digital? I mean, we haven't really talked about that, but we haven't talked about it before in the podcast, but it's quite a big thing that happened to us who were like, you know, non-Premier League teams in the EFL. I mean, that was a huge thing then.
Yeah, it really brought money into the, you know, it brought a lot of money. And I think that time did coincide with Rotherham. Again, I might be horribly wrong in the years, but it did coincide with us going up from League One to the Championship, or then Division Two to Division One, as it would have been then. And it was all very exciting, wasn't it? There was money, it was always on TV. Didn't they work out that it would have been cheaper for ITV to take every single football fan that subscribed out for a dinner and a hotel stay?
Yeah, something like that. It was, and the money that went in was insane. I mean, that's why if you look at the league back then, outside the Premiership, obviously, which I think still back then was Division 1, Division 2, Division 3, and then the Nationals.
Yeah.
It was a completely different, it was different football, and not just because of the time, but I mean, so many kind of clubs benefited from it and said, well, we're going to buy all these players and go a bit nuts. And then some of them played it safe and went, this is too risky, and didn't take any risks. But a lot of clubs really were affected by what happened to ITV Digital when it all went wrong. So yeah, it was a strange one.
It was a weird time, wasn't it? I think I look back on that time on football, to me, because I think you always romanticise the football you watched as a child. Is that right? I don't know if it's just me, but I remember thinking, I look back now and go, I wish football was like that. I remember, you know, stood up watching football, and, you know, now I'm like, oh, I wish I could stand as a football. Back then, as an 11-year-old, I was knackered and I just really wanted to sit down. But at the time, it was all, you could stand up at the football. Mm. It seemed to be more, I think, especially when you're looking at championship level, what was exciting was you didn't have to have the best team. You could get by with a good bunch of players and team spirit, and you could be competitive. While I think now in the championship, if you don't have a budget, you really can't compete at all. And I think that showed how many teams are going up and going down. And that was, and also you used to be able to, I don't know, like even the loan market seemed more fun back then, because you used to get players that were actually in the first team, not out of their fourth year on the academy, having never played first team football before. Yeah. You'd sometimes look at like Liverpool's bench and go, oh, we might get him, you know, because we're in the championship. Well, now, obviously, there's no way a club like Rotherham would take anyone off Liverpool's bench, not with the form they're in anyway. And I think that was, for me, that was what I loved about football, was it was competitive. Well, now I feel like, I know money's always ruled the roost and it's always the bigger clubs and stuff, but it feels almost impossible for someone to give it a go nowadays.
Yeah. I mean, it's a strange one, isn't it? Because we have seen, you were talking earlier about how your kind of safe space of Rotherham is top of the championship, bottom of the championship, top of League One. But you have seen teams like Barnsley that were in that position for so long that you mentioned earlier, who have made a jump up and are now competing at the playoffs.
How are you feeling about the playoffs, about having not made it? Are you okay?
Well, again, we've filmed this at a great time where you boys really could have done us a favour, but you didn't. And then with our lot, yeah, I mean, we didn't make it. But do you know what? Second half of the season, I think it was coming a long way off. It wasn't just kind of this last-minute slip-up. It had been terrible for us the second half of the season. So, you know, it was... To me, when it happened, it wasn't a huge surprise. But then I suppose, again, it goes that Reading, for a long time, have been bottom of the championship. And suddenly this year, we've managed to turn things around again and compete up the top. But having said that and seeing these teams that jump up, I'm not sure the financial situation at Barnsley. I don't know if anything's drastically changed. But do you think there is too much of a gap now in the championship, almost mirroring the Premier League? Because you could kind of look at the beginning of the season and... You know that the teams who've got money, Norwich, Watford, Swansea, are going to be at the top end of the table. And then when you look at like Rotherham, like Wickham, you kind of think this is going to be tough.
Massively. And I'm like, for example, a couple of years ago, I went away to watch Rotherham play Villa in the Championship.
Mm.
And because being a Rotherham fan, going away at Villa is a massive day out. Like, you know, that would normally have to be a cup tie.
Mm.
And I looked at the teams and I remember being a bit geeky at it. And I think they had £68 million worth of player on the pitch.
Yeah.
And we had £2.5 million worth of player on the pitch. And I think it's fair to say we got absolutely fucking dicked. And but it wasn't even competitive. It looked like a cup tie, not two teams in the same division.
Well, that's the issue, isn't it? Because, I mean, I remember... We beat Coventry City earlier this season. I think we beat them 3-0. And it was at a time we'd come off a bit of a bad run. But then when I looked at I did a similar thing. Well, it wasn't me who did it. It was a Coventry fan who said, well, George Puskas didn't even play, was worth more than their entire squad. And you kind of think, ugh, like that's where we are now in the championship. I mean, don't get me wrong. You've had the odd year where, let's say, a team of kind of punched above their weight and slipped into the championship. Take like Yeovil. Like, I mean, that was insane. I mean, I remember going to Yeovil away and they didn't even have, you know, a cover over their away stand and most of the stadium back then. It was mad. And now I think Yeovil now are in the National League. So, they were literally gone from the championship to the National League in less than 10 years. So it's crazy, really. But there are a lot of teams now where it is a shame. You know, the fact that like Coventry City, who again, 20 years ago, Premier League, Dion Dublin, you know, big, good players. And they're now kind of, you know, playing against teams where, like, no one big, Reading, where a striker who didn't even play is worth more than their squad. It's the gulf is getting bigger.
the way I've read something interesting though, that apparently they're saying that maybe bizarrely Brexit might change it.
Oh, really? In what way?
Because you can't do a Norwich or a Brentford anymore, because someone looked at it and said most of Norwich and Brentford's players that they've signed currently, who was in the Championship they signed, would not have got in on the point system.
Oh, okay.
So, apparently the market's going to fall out of the Championship because the wages aren't there, because they won't be able to bring in, I mean, unless they're going to suddenly go find the equipment from South America, which I guess they might, but you know, it's going to take a while for teams to do that. So apparently that might perversely drop the calibre in the Championship of the standards. And also Prem teams will take the top end Championship players for their squads.
Yeah.
So it might lower the standards over 5 years, which is, I'm trying to work out if I'm happy or sad about that.
Well, it's interesting on that, because there are a lot of teams, ours included. I don't know what the situation is at Rotherham, but have you got much of a youth squad?
Never seem to have much of a youth squad. Like, that's one of my big frustrations, is that I get that we can't afford to buy Championship players, but we don't seem to make that many either.
Yeah, see, that's where I think that's literally kept us afloat in the last few years, is the fact that we've been able to develop players, you know, like Sigurdsson, like Shane Long, who we can develop. They get good, and unfortunately we can't keep hold of them half the time, but we can sell them on for a lot of money. And I mean, that has saved us from the tax man, I know, on many occasions. So yeah, in that situation, teams like ourselves who have like a youth academy might benefit from that. But for teams like yourself, who are already not that financially well off, like you were saying, you know, where they are with the support and everything. Although I would say I've seen Rotherham players, they're a good, they're passionate supporters. Yeah, very loud, you know.
It's a classic northern working town fan base, as I say, as sounding like one of the most white middle class guys ever from the south. Do you know what I mean? But it's that classic, you know, not South Yorkshire, that if they'll get behind it, if it's good, like classic, isn't it? Classic football fans. All we want to see is effort. No, it isn't. We want to watch good footballers as well.
Yeah.
But we'll forgive a lot more if someone looks like they're giving a shit.
Because the New York Stadium behind me is, was it like 12,500, something like that?
Yeah, just, which I think is, so I think our average gate is about 8,000, 9,000.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. Like, we're not, you know, but apparently there's room to build, you know, again, if you got in, I don't know, say you did a Barnsley and you got up, but at least it means we're not going to do a Darlington where you've got a 25,000 seater mausoleum. Do you know what I mean? No one wants that. I was quite surprised to see how small Brentford's ground was. I think they've only put 15,000 in, top of the Championship.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know kind of where that decision came from, because obviously they went from Griffin Park, and that was a small... I loved that ground. I was so glad I got to go.
Especially under the top when, you know, like, and they've got the fans at the top, and it's a proper... Like, that was a proper... I'm sounding like not my dad, but you know what I mean? That's a proper football away day, isn't it? You know what I mean?
It was one of the best to do, and it's a shame that it's gone now. And then when they built the new stadium, I went to the game with a friend of mine who's a Brentford fan, and he said, we'll have a little drive past afterwards. And we went past, and I was like, really? That's, you know, it's nice, but it's, I thought it'd be bigger. And when I've had, like you, when I found out the attendance, I thought, you know, especially at the time, maybe the plans came in when they didn't know they were going to be competing for the Premier League.
Well, maybe they made the plans when it's threatened Leo Fortune West up front.
Yeah. Certainly that.
But we are lucky, in my opinion, we've got a great owner, and that makes a difference. He's saved the club, and he seems to be one of the guys that he looks more to safeguarding us than overstretching us. And I know it can be frustrating when you don't see much, when you see us struggling perennially in the Championship, but having seen my club nearly disappear as a younger fan, I'd always value someone making sure the club exists next year over trying to get into the Prem.
Yeah, I did have a bit of my research before. I did see that there seemed to be quite a lot of satisfaction from Rotherham fans of how the club's run, and of course the owner as well. A couple of episodes ago, I had Martin Ratton on, who is a Portsmouth fan, and I asked him about the situation with them, because they are very much now in the same position. I'd say, no, even... They are a very run-of-the-mill League One team.
League One now, and the standard is crazy. Sunderland, this year, you had Sunderland, Hull, Ipswich, You've got like FA Cups and stuff in that.
Yeah. But the one thing I do think is that I feel like League One are also a bit of like the naughty step, because they all sort of be, do you know what I mean? It seems to be full of teams who have kind of been a little bit complacent with their money. So you know, you have to watch the first series of Sunderland Till I Die to see the absolute state of what happened there. You know, there was what I love is my wife's not really into football, but she was told you should watch Sunderland Till I Die. And I'd already seen it, but she started watching it when she was off work. And she texted me one day and I said, you know, what are you up to? And I said, what are you up to? She said, I'm watching Sunderland Till I Die. And I was like, oh, great. And I'm thinking you wouldn't like this. And then about half an hour later, she just sent me a text saying, Jack Rodwell is a complete prick. Why won't he just fuck off and let him spend? And it's like, that's the sort of thing. I love that. But that is the sort of thing that happened, you know, and same with, same sort of thing happened with Ipswich. I know they got into a bit of an issue there. And similarly with, obviously, with Portsmouth. And I asked Martin, I said, right, would you rather that, during the Redknapp era, they said, right, enough's enough. You're not getting Crouch. You're not getting Defoe. Play it safe. Play it easy. Let's just, you know, see ourselves off in the Premiership. If we go down, we go down. And we'll just, you know, keep ourselves in the black and stay safe. Or would you rather they did what they did? You won the FA Cup. You got into Europe. You played against, who was it, Milan, under the floodlights at Fratton Park. And he said, you know, taking aside all the stuff happened to local businesses, which I know, he says, I know you can't do, but still, if you put that to one side and talk hypothetically, he says, I wouldn't change a thing. So for yourself,
I think that's very different when you're talking about genuine success.
Yeah.
As in European football, FA Cup wins.
Yeah.
Top end of the Prem, to finishing below Preston by a point.
Mm.
I think that's the difference. Where if you said to me, we can stretch it, have 3 years in the Prem, and then we'll end up in League Two for 5 years, sign me up, baby. Get me. I'm there. I'm there.
Well, I suppose that's the question. Would you take the risk? Because obviously they had to take a risk and go, let's just go for it, pile our money in, do a few dodgy deals, grab these players in and go. Would you take the risk if some, a new owner comes in, maybe with a bit of a shady past, starts saying, right, we're going to get these players in, we're going to sign that Liverpool bench player, we're going to sign this guy from Man City, and we're going to go for it, we're going to just get ourselves through the Championship. Would you feel uneasy about that, or would you be like, yeah, sod it, we've enjoyed our quiet time for too long?
I think like every football fan, you're going to be torn, aren't you? You're going to be an absolute hypocrite, aren't you? You're going to be like, I think it's different. I think you ask a Portsmouth fan that, and it's fine because their club exists. If you ask Stockport County fan that question, they might, you know, has Stockport gone out of business? I feel like they have. Have they? I don't know. Bury have definitely gone out of business. You know what I mean? It's that sort of issue, I think. But it would be fun, wouldn't it? It's a fun journey, for sure, to try and see if you can get some success.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? Because, I mean, one of the comparisons I had was Ipswich and how they spent, I think it was something like maybe 11 years in the Championship, 9, 10, 11 years in the Championship, with just finishing kind of 12.
And they hated Mick McCarthy, didn't they, the fan base? They hated him with absolute passion, and they paid the price, didn't they?
Exactly, yeah. And it's a funny one, because obviously when he left, what I normally do on this show, but I've just lost them, is I do emergency facts. But what I have just done is I have accidentally gone and deleted them, that I had them all here. Here we go. I found one at last. So first fact, I wonder if you know about this. The New York Stadium, or as it's now known, the ASL, looks like someone couldn't spell Arsenal properly, ASL New York Stadium. I'm sure it's just still known as the New York Stadium to the loyal Rotherham fans. But do you know why it's called the New York Stadium?
It's because the steel that was made in the area was sent to New York.
Yes, to build fire hydrants.
I did not know that bit.
There you go. Those famous fire hydrants you see on Sesame Street, I suppose. That's the nearest thing I could think of. Films, you know, when someone knocks it and the water comes out and they all go and play in it. A yellow cab drives past and someone goes, ah, that Rotherham United. So there we go. There's an emergency fact for you. And I've lost it, but that's a fine fact, isn't it?
I think that's enough. I don't know how much. I mean, I don't imagine people listen to this. I listen to it for the rather than fact. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe.
I know another one, if I can find it again, which I thought was quite good, was the highest ever attendance. Because I always find whenever I do these highest ever attendances, they're always really weird years, like 1923 or, you know, 1911, where you had kind of no control of crowds and you could just ram everyone in and you know, there'd be no security and things like that. But do you know when Rotherham United's highest ever attendance was and what the match was?
Gonna guess maybe like an FA Cup semi-final or something in the 60s.
Well, I'll tell you that in 1959/1960 season, they're involved in some epic FA Cup battles with the mighty Arsenal. Teams drew at Millamore in a third round tie, and against the odds, they drew in the replay at Highbury in front of a crowd of 57,598.
It just shows you how little was going on in those years, wasn't it? people really did they, you know, they really had nothing else going on, did they?
Well, you say that, but I mean, that should, can we really count that? Because that was obviously an away game that took place. And that's, I think, taking, you know, any sort of finals out as well. But what you really want to know is, what is the biggest attendance ever at the New York Stadium? That's what you want to know, right?
It was the only reason I didn't done the podcast, if I'm honest.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll tell you how many it was. It was 11,758. Can you guess the year that this match took place? And can you guess the team who you were up against? I will say the team would be considered, I suppose, a bit of a rivalry. Like, it's not really close. Like, it's not like, okay, like a Barnsley, but it's kind of close-ish.
Leeds?
Mm.
No. No idea.
Sheffield United.
Oh, Sheffield United. Oh, see, yeah, they're a big rival.
And
2017?
Oh, do you know, you're quite close. It's 2013.
I mean, thank you. That's got to be at that ground, right? Surely.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Millmore, I reckon we had bigger crowds than that.
Oh, of course, yeah. But that's still quite something. You know, what was going on in 2013? Was that quite a good season for your boys? I mean, Adam Lafondre had gone by then, so surely.
Well, if we're playing 2013...
We're in Championship, wouldn't it? Oh, no, it was League One. I've got it here, actually. Was it? No, it was League One.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought... I'm terrible working out years versus, do you know what I mean? I'm like, you know, when people go, oh, did you know who were the cup final in 2006? I'm like, no idea. But I remember the players. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of, but 2013, yeah, League One, big game, I guess. It's not far, is it? It's only 20 minutes away.
Affordable football. Just goes to show you can pack your grounds out. The emergency facts for you then, all compiled into one from my deleted sheet. There were probably some more, but I don't know. I don't know. I'm just grateful we don't have to do the quiz anymore. The most unpopular part of this podcast, the bloody
quiz. Well, I listened to the Nathan Caton one and there was meant to be 10 questions, but I only heard 2 in the quiz.
Right, because how does no one get this? This is why it's gone, because I have genuinely, I think, burned bridges with comedians over this quiz. They come on and we have this great chat about football and I'm like, I'm in with these guys. Like, it's going to end this call and he's going to go, we should write together, man. We should get together. Have you ever done Mock the Week? Because I think, you know, this is going to be... And what it is, right, it's called the Sudden Death. Sudden Death, 10-question shootout, right? Sudden Death, 10... You get 10 questions. If you get one wrong, it's all gone. The whole thing's gone. The most you can get is 10 questions. No one understands it. I even had to make a graphic and put it on social media for people to understand. And I've upset people with this line of questioning to the point where I had to just bullet. The Martin Ratton one took a turn for the worse. Pompey, when one of the questions was about one of their players and how they died, and it was like a recent death of a player, and it was horrific. And we just said, should we just end it here? Let's just end the podcast. It's like, yeah, good idea. And then the other one was like with Nathan Caton, is that there? It's become infamous, the Nathan Caton episode for this, which is that the joke always was that the questions came from somewhere shite, like the Beano or newsround.com. But they're always like an odd question that caught you out. And sometimes really upset people because they were like, you just made me look stupid. Just made me lose on a CBBC quiz. But there weren't many Brentford quizzes. So I found one on this London.live or something. I thought, oh, this will be fine. And the first question was something like, when were they? I went, this will do. And I went, fine. And when I got to question three, it was something impossible. Like in their very first existence in the season, what was the name of the kit man? And Nathan Caton's face, you can see it on the video, he just loses his shit. He's just like, what are you doing?
And like, and Nathan's a super lovely bloke and super passionate fan. But I was just like, oh man, the question must have gone so bad, you just edit it out. Like, that's what I thought would happen. I was like, sounds that edits it. Like, maybe it's kicked off. Like, maybe there's drama. Like, I don't know. But I get it now, sudden death. I was just, yeah.
I think the funniest thing about that interview as well was that, we talked quite a lot about before what had happened recently, Brentford's main kind of era of success came during the Second World War. And it was quite funny finding out that, you know, the pandemic had knocked out pretty much a whole season for 3-4 months. But during World War II, Brentford were bombed during the Blitz, but they only missed 5 games of football before resuming.
I thought that because Rotherham missed more games this year because of COVID.
Yeah, exactly. It's nuts that you're actually getting blitzed and like the stadium was bombed. And what I've cracked up is you've seen like what, I mean, these days you see like groundsmen, they look like surgeons. They come out there like almost with like a scalpel kit and start cutting up the grass, making sure it's good. Back then, a groundsman was literally a guy with a broom and a bit of sawdust. And I love the idea of like grounds getting bombed. They just come out, nah, that'll do. That's all right. Just sweep that off.
In my mind, Harry Redknapp was still like managing back then. And was just like, hit the channels, get the ball in the craters and fucking do them. Get them in the craters and knock it about.
Oh, man. Oh. So, yeah, there'll be no quiz today or ever again.
The funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
A much more popular gimmick we like to run, we'll do now, which is I'd like you to pick a fantasy five-a-side Rotherham United football team, but the team must consist of, shall we say, cult-like players. So players that mean something to you. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, Sean Gauthier or you know, Lafondre, all these, you know, these players who went on to be, you know, big top goal scorers. Just players who meant something to you, Jonathan Elson. So who have you got?
So in goal, I've got Mike Pollitt.
Mike Pollitt, okay.
Yeah, people have known him more famously when he came on for Wigan in the League Cup final some years ago for the injured someone or other, and he played very well, but still lost. He's the best keeper I've ever seen. He did leave 1 year for Chesterfield for more money, but we don't talk about it. It's a bit like, you know, if someone has an affair and they come back and they sort of manage to make it okay. It's that sort of situation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where, you know, the trust never really got rebuilt, but, we had some good holidays afterwards. We had some good times. I picked a defender here. I have actually picked some of our best players, and I just because. But yeah, maybe I should have done a few more mentions. But anyway, one of my other players I've got is Kari Arnesen.
Right. Okay.
He came and played centre back for us, and he was wonderful. It was hilarious. We signed him when we were in League Two from the Scottish Prem because apparently we were just chucking the money around at that point. And
ITV Digital money.
Yeah, I think it was after. It was unfortunately under the Steve Evans reign. I don't know. Oh,
okay. Yeah, no, I've heard about that.
Yeah, everyone has. We got a lot of success under Evans, but it was with quite a lot of shame attached. It was, you know what I mean? It was a bit like, you know, it's a bit like having a one-night stand. You're sort of proud, but sort of not so proud, you know? But he was a wonderful player, ball-playing centre-back. So much time on the ball. Nothing funnier, though, than watching a ball playing centre-back play League Two. Just the absolute panic on their face when they take the ball down and try and play it into midfield, but only to realise there is no midfield. But what a wonderful player. Best centre-back I've ever seen us play. He played in the World Cup for Iceland, played against in the Champions League against Ronaldo. Yeah, by far and away the best player.
I used to partner for a while, I think. Either Ingemarsson for Iceland. What a centre-back they would have made. Solid.
Yeah, just wonderful. Just so much time on the ball. And didn't matter how many times Rotherham fans told him to hoof it, he wouldn't. He was the man of his principles. gone for Leif Recklington as well. Right. Our captain for a while. All-action midfielder, box-to-box. Our captain, when we got promoted to the championship, the first time I'm in the New York Stadium, scored the winner. Just very, very good player. Left on good terms. Just, yeah, one of my favourite. Although I nearly went Kevin Watson because I knew you'd have enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Ex Reading player. But I realised I couldn't. It was a debate, but I thought I can't have too much Reading love on this. And then I have gone Lafondra.
Yes, good old Alfie.
Gone Alfie. Great goal scorer. I can't believe how little you bought him for us, like 300 grand. It was absolutely...
It's mad, isn't it? Considering he, you know, a couple of years later was in the Premiership. It's nuts, really. Really.
And just, yeah, top finisher. Loved him. And then I've gone Will Hoskins for my other up front player.
Yeah.
Played for Watford and a few others, but he scored a lot of goals at a time where I was about 16. I was loving my football, and he was again one of our own youth player came through, scored loads of goals. Genuinely, one of my favourite players I've ever seen. So that will be my top five. I'd also like to say honourable mentions for Chris Edrick, right winger. I loved him, but he was a Wednesday fan. He then played the end of his career for Wednesday. You deserve so much. You can forgive. And Ben Pringle as well. Loved him. Great ball playing, left mid, great set pieces. But I put Frecklington ahead of him because captain. And Frecklington pulled the badge a lot more. And I'm easily won over by people that kiss the badge.
It's all a bit of a mercenary kind of act that now, isn't it? Kissing the badge. Because, I mean, I'll never forget Tevez doing it at United and then doing it a couple of, well, months later at City.
It's kind of similar for comedy, isn't it? You just take it where, you just take the work where it is, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah. If I have to kiss, you know, a comedy store just badge, just the tonic. Yeah.
And then next week you're at the Glee, giving it the big one.
Exactly. No, that.
I'm not leaving. I'm here. I'm here for the season.
The funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Let's talk a bit about comedy then, actually, because we met a couple of summers ago at a comedy club out in Wiltshire Way, which was fun. It was really good, it was the Crick Lane Comedy Club.
That's the one, Crick Lane. I was trying to think what it was called.
Yeah, run by Michael Colwegg, lovely guy.
Lovely guy.
Big muscly wrestler as well.
Oh, you wouldn't knock over his pint, would you?
You would not, no. But what I don't forget is just the kind of halfway through your set was just this moment of, it's a bit weird here, isn't it? And I think you're going to kill me. And they were loving it, absolutely loving it. But they did just kind of come for like 10 minutes of you just being like...
It was really hot as well. It was like insanely hot. It was like it was like July or something, wasn't it? But it was like, it was properly hot. And there was about, 100 people in, give or take? Is that about right?
I think it might have been more. I think if I remember right, you told me it was 130, 140, something like that.
Yeah, really well attended. But it was like, it was beer garden weather, but there was 120 people in a darkened room.
Yeah.
And it was good fun. It was quite quite a new comedy club, wasn't it? I think it might have only been the third night they've done. So yeah. I think it was sort of an audience getting used to what live comedy looks like or what stand-up looks like.
But it was really, really cool. And then off the back of that, you very kindly had me over at yours at Comedy at Milk, where with Andrew Lawrence.
Yeah, it was
and
nice.
And come the pandemic, so what's your current situation with Comedy at Milk? Are you going to continue to? Because I know you do things all over the place. We had actually something booked in for Leicester that we were going to do together, and obviously that got pulled back because lockdown 2 came in. But where what sort of thing have you got going on now as you return back to comedy?
So I don't want to boast, but actually the gig done two gigs already on the
Blimey. Well, outside, where have you done them?
I've done, my Leicester club, luckily, had managed to get local council approval to do outdoor shows even before the 17th of May. I know this will be in the future, but that was quite a big deadline.
Mm.
So we managed to do two shows already. So my club in Leicester is going to be outdoors every single Monday.
Oh, great.
All the way through to the end of September. Obviously, you should come up and do one when you're free.
Oh, thank you.
Because we were going to do this face-to-face, weren't we?
Yeah, that was the plan, I think. That was literally, I think every interview I was going to do was going to be face-to-face. And I think I've done two faces. I've been to Jacob Hawley's flat in the height of the pandemic. I went to London and popped to his thing. It was literally like 2 days before lockdown, I think I went to see him and his pregnant partner. So that was nice and safe. And then I popped to Bristol the day before that as well to see John Matthews again, right as we were, as the sort of pandemic was coming in. So yeah, bit of a weird atmosphere that one, because just before we started recording with Jacob, he was literally sat there saying, you know, I don't know if I'm going to have a job in a couple of weeks. And okay. A lot of people, you know, obviously, you know, we run clubs and it was all pulled. And yeah, you did run some great gigs over the summer. I saw you managed to get, obviously, Leicester thing started up again. And I saw you did shows with Jeff Norcott. How did they all go? They looked packed.
They were great. I mean, we've been lucky as well in comedy, and lucky is obviously a relative term, but because music and a lot of other art forms haven't been able to return in any form since the first of COVID started, I think comedy's managed to get some new fans come in because people are looking for stuff to do, and the only thing that is on is drive-in cinema or comedy, because tribute bands haven't been on, you know, actual music hasn't been on. No one likes Magicians, really, do they? Maybe. I don't know. I couldn't think of anything worse, to be honest. Sorry, all the wonderful magicians I work with, you're all very talented. And it's not in any way weird that you have a goldfish out with you in a nightclub. And I think that as people are loving Zoom, and Zoom's great, but I think people are desperate for that live entertainment fix and that connection to something. So I've been lucky that my Leicester club did every Monday. We managed to stay outdoors until October 26th, which is fucking crazy if you think about it. People were stood outside, like sat outside in the cold for these shows. The lineups were, I do say so myself, pretty amazing. Acts like, you say, Jeff Norcott, Marcus Briggs, Dr. Lisa Chaponda, Reg D. Hunter. And so that club's going every Monday again, all the way through to the end of September is the plan so far. We've got acts booked like Sarah Pascoe, Sindhu V, Catherine Bohart, Marcus Briggs, that's coming back, Nabil Abdul Rashid's coming down, Sarah Baron, Carl Donnelly, Simon Brodkin, Omar Dejali, all these acts are coming down. So that's going to be pretty cool.
And that's every Monday. Every from what date?
From the past.
Oh, because it's already obviously started going. But so as from now, where is it in Leicester? Where can we find tickets? All that.
So it's called The Black Horse in Aylston, which is postcode is LE28NA. And if you just Google Gigantic Giggles in the Garden, that will take you to the tickets. And all tickets are £10 regardless of how famous the acts are on. So it's brilliant. A pretty amazing night, to be honest. And then I've got a club in Bracknell, where I live. We're going outdoors. We did a few outdoors shows last year with Nathan Caton and Marlon Davis, which were good fun. And we've got the first show sold out with Nabil Abdul Rashid. And then we've got Darren Harriott, Stephen Bailey, and Laura Lex as our headliners, plus many other great acts. So you can find that stuff out at Laughter Craft Comedy, which is my company comedy company website and that sort of stuff. And hopefully Comedy at Mill will be back, but not while social distancing is a thing, because it's a small little comedy club.
It is quite a cozy place, yeah. It's a great night, but it is quite a cozy one. It's a bit like with my one as well. We literally run it in a pub that's normally closed on a Monday, and they open up exclusively for us, but it is very, very much packed in. So I don't know if and when we're going to be able to return to that particular venue. But at the end of the day, though, I mean, you say that, you know, things have already opened up and stuff, but even when this goes out, I still think comedy is going to be harder to find than it has been, and it will be for a little while. So to have a regular weekly show, and with that caliber of, I mean, this is an open mic night. This is, you know, a high caliber of acts. That's fantastic. So I'll make sure that we plug that again at the end of the show, because a lot of people are asking me, I know just general people who've never shown an interest in what I do before are saying, look, I want to go and see some comedy. Where can I go? And I mean, people like, I had a friend of mine over in, I think it was Norfolk the other day, said, do you know anything about comedy in Norfolk? And I was like, why? And he's like, I just want to go. I've heard it's opening up again, and I don't know where to go.
People want to do stuff, don't they? They want to have that live connection. And I think I've not done any online comedy, because I saw a lot of the videos you've been doing, and I think they're brilliant, especially like the ones in the green room are very funny.
Oh, thank you.
And I enjoy that a lot, but for me, there's nothing quite replaces that. It's a bit like football. It's the exact same thing as football. Like, I watched a Carabao Cup final thing the other day, and it was so nice to hear real fans in the ground.
Yeah, it was.
And it's the same with comedy. As much as you can enjoy a Zoom show for what it is, there's nothing like being in a group of like-minded people having a good time. And that's the, I mean, I say that as if I'm a Rotherham fan. I don't think I've ever actually had a good time watching us, but it's nice to be with people while you're being miserable. I was watching the Rotherham game. I watched an enormous amount of football during lockdown. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
Because bored. I've never watched as much Champions League, Premiership, that sort of stuff. But because of Rotherham's COVID, we've been on Sky a lot more recently, because we've been on odd days. And my wife, who doesn't like football, she'll come with me to the odd game. I said, I can always tell when you're watching Rotherham because the football's in the air a lot more. and then I went, no, it's not always like that. Just as our centre back hoofed it down the channel, she went, look, boom.
Brilliant. That is classic.
I wouldn't even mind as well, but we're in the Championship. This is one of the best teams we've ever had. I was like, you weren't there when we were in the terrible Athletic Stadium in League Two. You didn't see how bad that was.
It's the funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
I've got a random football story if you want to hear it.
Go for it. Yeah, yeah.
So he was friends with a guy he worked with whose wife was Chinese, right? This is, and weirdly, his friend was a big Coventry fan, right? So his friend's a big Coventry fan, his wife's Chinese, right? At which point, Frank Nuble moves from Coventry to a Chinese team. But weirdly, so then my mate Tom's friend ends up tweeting him saying, oh, good to see you in China. I'll support you while I'm in China. He ends up then getting message back from Frank going, can you help me translate my contract? So he ends up involved massively with Frank Nuble's move to this Chinese Super League team. All because his wife's Chinese, and they're all helping, and they're texting, and they're going, yeah, this means this means that.
Oh my god.
And then the last time he'd heard from him was he got a text, which must have been a group text, that Frank Nuble sent out asking if anyone wanted to buy his Range Rover.
It's good that he's kept them in the loop. He thought, oh, there's nice people who translated, they must have a bit of money.
I'm like, I've got that story slightly skewed, but it's give or take. It's in that world where he goes from just being a Coventry fan to sending him a tweet to suddenly helping him negotiate his contract in China.
Imagine that. That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing.
because I know that Twitter and social media, especially as we're talking now, is obviously a massive vehicle for hatred at times.
Yeah.
It is awful. And there's that horrible side to it. But I think it's also amazing because I don't know, I don't say you're the same age as me, Sam, but I think we're similar-ish.
Mm.
And when we were growing up, we had no access to our footballers at all that we loved. They were superheroes. You couldn't get hold of them. Do you know what I mean? You just wasn't a thing. And I think it's quite cool now that if players want to interact with fans, they've got that option.
When I first joined Twitter around 2010, it was completely different. It was, in my opinion, better. Twitter was better back then. I find it quite a horrible place now. I have to wind myself off it every now and then. I have to just delete it off my phone for a week or two and try not to... Yeah, it's a horrible thing. It can be really bad. But back then, I really felt like you could join a community. So, I mean, I had, you know, loads of followers who were all just Reading fans. And it was really sweet. I mean, I remember when we went to the playoff final in 2011, someone had actually worked out a little, like, seating thing where everyone could say, like, where it was, like, at, and then their username went. And we worked out where everyone was sat. So on the actual day, we could... So I know that, oh, 2 seats over there, there's at Royals Legend 69er, and I'll go and speak to him.
If you want to abuse a player, you've got to do it the old-fashioned way. Buy the corner flag, wait for him to take a corner, and then you call him a fucking wanker. That's the old school way.
That's the only way, yeah.
Those are the old rules. You go, where'd Gillingham? You let Andy Hessenthaler, as he's walking off, you call him a fucking dick, you scream at him, everyone knows the game. They know the rules, you know the rules, everyone's involved.
Exactly.
On that note of football, one of my highlights of my comedy career relating back to football was I got booked to do Paul Warne's testimonial.
Right, okay.
I'm a Rotherham football manager. Now, that, as we point out, the problem is I am a Rotherham fan. I do love Rotherham. I don't sound like a Rotherham fan. So when I walk on to do this testimonial in Rotherham, obviously in a working men's club, and I go, hi, I'm a Rotherham fan. You just see the disbelief in everyone. You know, everything you're like... Sure you are, dickhead. Sure you are. Name the reserve team from 1984. Otherwise, I don't think you're really a fan. But this was one of the most embarrassing moments as a footballer of all, as a football fan of all time. Was at the time one of our ex-players. I had a generally good gig. I was hosting it. I did a Q&A with Paul. It was great fun. Obviously, I was like a giddy little child meeting all the players because Paul Warne was a player when I was a teenager. So massive fan, and he was part of that successful team in the early 2000s. I was meeting all the players, and we had Ryan Creswell playing for us, right? And as you know, as a football fan, there's quite a few Creswells within football.
Mm.
More famously, Richard Creswell.
Yeah.
I spent the whole night, the whole night from the stage referring to him as Richard Creswell. Like, the whole night. Like, not like once, and I made it up, and I was like, oh, there you go. The whole night. I reckon I probably referred to him 20 times. Shook his hand at the end, had a beer with him. I knew he was called Ryan. I knew it.
Oh, man.
But what was worse, it didn't twig into my head until halfway home.
So you probably left on quite a high. Go, yeah, well, I'm in
I
there
left
now.
Such a high. I'm like... I've done the gig. Paul Warne's given me his phone number. We're going to be mates. I'm going to help with the coaching. Like, you know, this is going to be like Steve Evans, a man of time. He slagged off Steve Evans. I slagged off Steve Evans. Oh, guys, I was ready to book the trip to Malaga. Do you know what I mean? I was like, we are going to be boys. And I was driving down the M1 for the joys of life. And then just the dread, you know, that moment where it just hits your stomach and you go, no, I didn't, did I? I did. And I'd called him the wrong name, a player I respected, who loved for our club. He was a captain, centre-back, iconic player, Rotherham, a born and bred player, loved it. Called him the wrong name to his face in front of 200 people for the whole night.
God. Oh, man.
I did tweet him to apologise, and I just got a like, which I don't quite... Do you know what I mean? You know that thing where you're like...
Hey. Been taken away. The privileges should be taken away. Oh, sorry, I called you the wrong name. You didn't say it in the tweet, did you?
I was like, yeah, at Richard. Fine. I'm tagging Richard Creswell. No, just horrific. Just even, it's one of those memories that every now and then it'll just pop into my head. You know that one where you're just like, you're just loading the dishwasher and then just the horror just drops into your stomach. It was, yeah.
Oh, awful. Mate.
I didn't get paid. I just got free pucker pie and peas.
That's the most Rotherham thing ever.
I got pucker pies and peas. And I got a VIP day at the stadium, to be fair. But, you know, it was. Oh, there's your drink. Love a rum and coke, please.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
It's a strange one, really, because I kicked off this podcast in, pun fully intended, in March 2020. And I was sort of at the time a little bit like, maybe this is a really crap time to start a football podcast. You should start at the beginning of the season or at the end of the season, maybe. And you know, I thought, well, weird time to do it, March, 2 months before the season ends. But then, literally as episode one went out, lockdown came in a few days later, and it's kind of been more comedians talking about football in lockdown. I mean, this could easily be, I mean, it's gonna, I don't know whether it's going to date it massively, but you know, I want these podcasts to be mainly for fans, and I understand that it's going to be people listening to this episode who are Rotherham fans and will have no interest in listening to a Brentford episode, a Portsmouth episode, a Man City episode, and you know, some people are just going to be general football fans and want to listen to it. Some people are going to be comedy fans, not really care about the football, just listen to it. But I was always a bit wary about whether it would date it. But I think it has actually been quite interesting to talk to comedians and as fans of football and see how they've coped with lockdown. And it's quite strange that this will probably be the last time we really go into it, because come series three, which I'm probably going to leave for quite a while, will hopefully be when everything's pretty much back to normal.
Well, yeah. And then you've got the whole, back to it. How's it feel?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. But thanks, man. It's really good to chat. Like we said, you know, lockdown has been a strange thing, and it's been good for me. I mean, I haven't done many online gigs, but I think I've done two or three. But my favourite part of doing anything online during lockdown, whether it be the podcast or online gigging, is just chatting to people about comedy and about football who I haven't seen in ages. So it's been good to chat to you, mate.
It's good, man. It's the worst thing about this lockdown has been the isolation, I think.
Yeah,
the problem is people have managed to you don't realize how many interactions you used to have until you get them all taken away.
Yeah,
and you've noticed it at gigs that reopened, as in the ones that opened last time, is before comedians would finish their gig and run home as soon as possible. But for the first time, noticing comics hanging around and chatting because they've been on their own, properly on their own, for months, and then they're like, let's just have a chat, because this is actually quite pleasant to be in a room full of other people for a change.
Yeah, and I think it has actually improved the podcast. You know, when the first couple of episodes was really kind of, you know, running into, you know, it was John and, as I said, John and Jacob were the only ones I recorded in person. And it was very much kind of, not rushed, but it was kind of like, there are other things going on. It was a Saturday afternoon. Both me and Jacob had gigs to get to that night. We knew this had to be done in an hour. Same one with John. It was before we both did his night in Bristol. We knew this has to be. But with lockdown, it's been, you know, first thing Nathan Caton says in this episode is, it's great to talk to someone else that isn't my girlfriend. And it's, you know, and I mean, bless him, Mike Fenton Stevens, who could only give me an hour for Man United. I think we ended up staying on our Zoom call for about 4 hours chatting about all sorts.
I think that's the joy as well, as you enjoy doing the podcast, is that I can come up with that, like that story about the testimonial, which is probably the funniest story I said today, and you can edit that back in to work.
But yeah,
because you've spoken long enough, you found the good stuff, something good that you can put into it. Well, if you're in a rush, you just kind of like, boom, 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 that'll have to do.
Yeah. Exactly. And what I really appreciated is that we've had some lovely feedback from listeners. A lot of it has just been like, it's pub chat that I don't get anymore. It's people in, like, we're in a pub. We'd probably have half this conversation anyway if we got onto the subject of Rotherham. We would probably just have this chat anyway after a gig or something like that.
Yeah, be like, oh, Lafondra, he was great, wasn't he? Can't believe he bought it. Like, that's the stuff you just chat. You know what I mean? Like, it's just normal. It's just
exactly
just people being people.
Bought for £300,000, sold for £9 million.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and on that bombshell. Oh, I must. Oh, before you go, you don't obviously leave empty-handed.
I'm a Rotherham fan. We always leave empty-handed.
You don't today. You, I've got you a. Oh, I hope this comes out. I've got you a shirt to send to you.
Oh.
So apologies. I don't know your wardrobe. So if you don't have it already, then I don't know. Well, hopefully, if not, we can get you something else. But yeah, I've got a Rotherham. I don't know what season that is. I couldn't tell you. Didn't do enough research, as I said, but I'll get that sent out to you as a thank you for coming on the podcast.
I tell you what, you can bring it to Leicester when you come and do the gig.
Oh, deal. Absolutely brilliant. Deal. Done. All right. Thank you very much, Rocket. I really appreciate it, mate.
Yes, mate. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Jonathan. Really enjoyed the chat as always. I'm going to miss these podcasts when they're over. I really am. Anyway, one thing I won't miss is Zoom gigs and lockdown. And with comedy nights open up again, make sure you go and check out one of Jonathan's nights. If you're in Berkshire, you can catch him around Reading or in Bracknell. And if you're in the Leicestershire area, don't forget the Black Horse in Aylstone. He's running comedy every Monday all the way throughout the summer. And I'm going to be there at one of them as well. So if you can get down there on... Let me check my dates really quickly. I should have done that before I recorded this outro. Yes, it's Monday the 12th of July. You can catch me there and you can come and tell me how much you love the podcast or how much you love the podcast and hate me. I'm easy either way, but don't have a go at the podcast. In the meantime, follow us on social media at @comfootytalk. That's at @comfootytalk. Find us with that handle on Twitter and Instagram. Drop us a message if you want to ask a question for the very, very, very last episode of the series. That's comedianstalkingaboutfootball@gmail.com. And check out the YouTube channel as well. Loads of extra stuff on there. Search Comedians Talking About Football into YouTube and we should pop up. Can I say Comedians Talking About Football anymore in an outro? Comedians Talking About Football. I obviously can. Right, until next time, thanks very much for listening. Cheers. Podcast Network.